You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
The snap, the kick, it's been blocked again! Oh my! It's been blocked again! He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone! It's a touchdown! And the Gators have won the game! Tyreek Cleveland! Oh my! I can't believe what I just saw!
Dropping back the throw, pops and fires the ball. Over the middle.
Have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your boy Corey.
It's Dan.
And Delatorre.
Same corner, same time. How y'all boys feeling, man? November. Time went back an hour.
Elite.
I was talking about it with.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Elite parenting move on our part. Frankie, 15 months old, not aware of daylight savings time. Lauren and I proposed to Grandma, let's try our first sleepover Saturday night. Frankie,
how'd that work out?
Great for me. Great for me and Lo. Slept right through it. Enjoyed the clocks turning back. Haven't asked Grandma how it was, but elite parenting move for the first timers.
Not bad at all.
It's good.
Not bad at all.
Good choice, Nate. Was that your idea? Or did you read about this somewhere on the internet?
No, it was Lauren's idea. I don't know where she got it from. She said it, and I was like, genius.
Understood. I was talking with Nick before you joined, Corey, that when clocks fall back an hour, it always feels like significantly more than an hour. Like it does not feel like it should be 8 o'clock. Like it should be about 9:30 right now. But it was nice driving to work this morning. I usually leave around 6:30 to go to the office. Nice to see the sunrise. Just an elite. Feels much better in the morning rather than driving through darkness. So.
Yeah, I think the old age, man, getting older, bro, the hour means so much more to us older people, bro. So,
yeah,
I definitely felt it. The mornings are brighter, you know what I'm saying? Like, I like that part of it, but anyway, I had a solid weekend, man. Nothing too big, nothing too crazy, just chilled, man. Watched some Florida football. And that's pretty much summed it up, man. Nothing special. I went to the Mug Bowl on Friday, actually. That was pretty dope. 2 years in a row, I'm streaking now. I took a long hiatus. The Mug football seemed to be bad. Had a good time out there kicking. Went solo this time. Did a little media thing. Got sideline access. That was pretty dope. But that's it, man. Nothing special for Halloween.
Yeah, we didn't do all that much. We touched a little bit about it. Well, I did a show last night solo. Corey was supposed to be there, and then, you know, computer things happen. But otherwise, a good show. Go check that out. We talked a little bit about the coaching search. I did participate a little bit in festivities and went to a party on Saturday night with Sarah, which was great. Great time. But on Halloween itself, it was great. So we went and had a couple glasses of wine at this wine bar that we really like in downtown St. Pete. It's called the Wine Cellar and the Dutchman, Wine Cave and the Dutchman. Great spot. Great spot. A Dutch guy owns it. He's the Dutchman.
Great name.
And the Wine Cave is his wine selection. Right? Fantastic name. Anyway, so we did that. We walked the neighborhood for a little bit. And then she's like, I would like to watch Hocus Pocus. About 4 minutes into Hocus Pocus, she was asleep. I'm like, I don't want to watch Hocus Pocus. It's not a bad movie, but there's other things. Every single time that I'd go to reach for the remote, she would like wake up her little eyeballs. Like, man, I'm stuck. And then the movie's over. I'm like, all right, it's time to go to bed. She's like, did I sleep through the whole thing? I'm like, yeah. And like, I didn't want to watch it either. So Shout out to me. Incredible bonus points for me.
Pat on the back.
Pat on the back. Pat on the back. So anyway, now watching the Gators basketball, go Gators. I presume that that's where a lot of you guys are tuned in front of your TVs, hopefully watching us. Appreciate the Gators out too. Pardon me, an early lead. Corey, let's get a quick ad read. For those of you, before you ask, Nick was busy on Friday. A lot of people were wondering where you were, Nick, for game day eve. And Jordan is a little under the weather right now. So we'll hopefully all get back together on Friday. Corey, let's get a quick ad read, and then we'll get on with the show.
Got you, man. I don't know if it's just my end, but it seems like you're running on some Obama internet right now, man.
Might be. Might be.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, man.
Let me figure it out.
All good, all good. One time for the great folks at Brunt Insurance and Financial Services, the best of the best when it comes to insurance. Anything you need insured, from the panhandle to the keys, your home, your automobile.
Corey frozen.
I think he froze.
Yeah, he froze. So it's not my Obama internet.
No. It was his Obama internet.
Yeah. It's interesting how that works out. Oh, you froze.
What just happened?
The allegations threw a mirror right in your face.
What just happened, man? One time for the great folks that's running insurance.
Mr. Obama cut your internet line.
That's racist, Dan. Don't do that, man. Obama would never do that
over.
To me.
Yo, Greg, a full ad read. Let's start this over.
What time for the great folks at Brunt Insurance and Financial Services, man. Anything you need insured, from the panhandle to the keys. My man Greg is the best of the best. If you need your life, automobile, RV, motorcycle, boat, anything with wheels, I'm sure my man Greg could take care of you. It don't cost a dime to see if you can get a lower quote than what you're now receiving. I'm pretty sure he can save you some money. 954-589-2204. Greg has been insuring me for like the last 6-7 years. My home, best of the best, especially if you need some customer service, man. In this day and age of getting robots and foreign call centers, Greg's gonna pick that phone up and take care of you as a value customer and listener of Stadium and Gale. 954-589-2204 or bruninsurance.com.
Greg, what it do, baby?
All right, guys. Early Gators victory. Early Gators lead 15-10 right now. Unfortunately, the Gators did lose on Saturday to Georgia. They moved to 3-5 on the season. Final score 24-20. Gators took a lead early part. In the fourth quarter, Trey Smack hit a 54-yard field goal, which is I think he set a school record number of kicks for more than 50 yards. So shout out to him. Georgia marched downfield. Chauncey Bowens, former Gator commit, unfortunately, goes 36 yards, barely touched with about 4.5 minutes left in the game. Gators get an opportunity. Ball slightly underthrown, slipped on the grass. Typical Jacksonville turf monster was back. But I still don't think the ball did hit the ground in the J. Michael Sturdivant catch. But ultimately, Gators do lose this one. Game team looked like they played hard, certainly saw a lot of different types of sets and a little bit different offense under Ryan O'Hara and under the tutelage and head coaching of Billy Gonzalez, but just fortunately not enough for the Gators to pull out this victory. Guys, what were your overall thoughts on this one?
I mean, the game kind of played out how I thought it would play out. I thought it would be close the entire game. I know we spoke about it on the Friday show about it. Could it possibly go to a blow? I just think this team's too talented for anybody to just come in and smoke us. But the game played out how I kind of thought. We had a shot at the end, didn't make plays when we needed to make plays. DJ's got to hit some of those throws. There's a couple of throws, the one to Tank Hawkins and also the one to Sturdivant. It's not the easiest throw, but you got to set your feet and make that throw. And it just pulled me in, right? Like, this is a throwaway season. I've kind of watched this and chalked this up to we about to get a new coach. It is what it is. But, you know, they pulled me in this game. The offense looked like it was rolling smoother. You know, the plays looked more creative. Now, you look at the box score, it's not, you know, the numbers don't go crazy in the box score, but you are playing Kirby Smart, who's one of the best defensive-minded guys in college football. The offense looked better. You know, less penalties. It looked less clunky. The guys looked more sure and confident. Billy G looked good on the sideline, man. I think Billy G deserves a shot at head coach somewhere. He just looked like he was a man in charge, and he had those guys dialed in and ready to play some good football, man. Mm-hmm. The defense came in and got, I thought, enough stops. It got a little tricky down in the end. The safety play was, you know, it's been rough all year. I know we got some new safety coaches, and we was wondering preseason, would we miss Will Harris? I think the answer to that, yes. You know, I think the state safeties took a step back. A few players on the team and a few spots on the team, I think, took a step back. But it's one we let get away, bro. It was a rough one to watch, bro, because we had that team beat. I thought we played better than them. I thought Billy G was playing good chess, you know, as far as, like, you know, O'Hara, if we want to say O'Hara's calling the plays. I thought he played good chess. We didn't see a lot of tight end targets. It was a significant drop in 12 personnel. It looked like a Florida team should look with getting ball in space. Shout out to Eugene Wilson, who everybody kind of buried. Came alive, man. Came alive. A lot of targets, plays downfield. It was amazing what he did when he, you know, you give him routes that's downfield. So, all in all, just more of what this regime has been, you know, close but no cigar.
Yeah. Nick?
I think there was a lot of talk about, like, I guess, like, getting blown out. I think going to practice, big emphasis last week was starting fast. And I thought that was interesting because I guess you could have seen a Texas last year when DJ was out, Graham was out, and the team kind of gets scored on quick and goes, going to be a long afternoon. Let's pack it up and get ready to get back on the plane. I think you could have gotten some of that. Let's say Georgia goes down. That first drive, Florida's stuffing the run. Florida's stuffing the run, but it's like stuff run, 13-yard completion. And they go 8 plays, 75 yards, 4 minutes. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, you've got an answer here, or else you could get touchdown, 3 and out, touchdown, and then that pack it up mentality. But the defense, I mean, after that drive, it went 3 plays and interception, and then punt. The defense played really, really well before giving up the field goal touchdown in the middle eight. I think what my big takeaway is, we've talked about this so many years in Jacksonville, like the talent gap between Georgia and between Florida, and especially those years where Kirby had it rolling and he was getting 7 5-star quarterbacks every cycle. I felt like there wasn't a big talent discrepancy, that Florida's roster was as good as Georgia's roster, that, you know, a couple throws, if DJ gets back, we're talking about Florida winning by a score or more, just missing some guys that were open, a couple just missed tackles, like the little things. We're talking about like little things, and I feel like it's been a while since we've been able to talk about a World's Largest Outdoor Cocktail Party where you're like, one or two plays – and those two teams are really close, and Florida could have won the game. You know, last year, of course, before DJ gets hurt, I think Florida's leading or the game was tied in the fourth quarter, but I think that was my big takeaway, was that as we're in the coaching search, like, hey, if we can just retain this roster, like the next coach is not walking into the same situation that Napier walked into. Like, this is a talented roster.
Yeah, you know, having the lead in the fourth quarter against Georgia with an interim head coach is where you want to be, and shows where the talent on this team is. And again, it's another loss where the Gators are winning or have the chance to win in the fourth quarter that they don't end up winning. You know, you look at the USF game, the Miami game down a score with an interception on their side of the field. This game, you know, kind of goes on, and it's, you know, just some unfortunate circumstances. And, you've got to overcome those, and you've got to figure out ways to overcome. You know, winners win, and that's what you have to do. Georgia looked beatable. They Gators, I thought, for all intents and purposes, like, looked good in their pass block. They gave opportunities for DJ Lagway and for this offense to score. Run blocking was a little suspect, you know, at times, but, you know, I give credit to this team for fighting hard. It just wasn't enough again. And we find ourselves in kind of the same Groundhog's Day of saying you were close, you had a lead, and you couldn't put it together on, you know, the last drive or in the last quarter. And I'm going to find Bud Davis has a great stat. The Gators, hold on, let me find it real quick, because I think that this is, I mean, it's an incredibly fascinating stat. Let's see.
Well, while you look for
go ahead.
Trey Wilson, really, really good game. More receiving yards this game. Pulled up. What did he have? 121 receiving yards. More receiving yards against Georgia than he had on the season coming in. I think Jaden Ball looks good. 15 carries, 72 yards, 4.8. He gets in the end zone. Yeah, defensively, I thought Jordan Castell probably had one of his better games. George Gums had a really good game as well.
Shout out to George.
Not to bounce around too much, but I thought Florida did a really good job. Florida's D-line, I thought, for the most part, was kind of whooping Georgia's O-line up front. Maybe wore down a little bit towards the end of the game, but winning a lot of those battles for most of the afternoon.
Yeah, I think
I want to pull up this but – Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. You're fine. Go ahead.
I want to pull up this stat from Bud Davis, and it comes from somebody else, so I forgot, but Bud has highlighted it, and it's expected points added in the fourth quarter, which is a statistic that measures the value of play. By comparing a points a team is expected to score before and after the play, it accounts for factors like down and distance, field position, time remaining to provide a more context aware evaluation of performance. The Gators are losing in the fourth quarter by 67.43 expected points by the way that they play in the fourth quarter, which is amongst the worst in college football. So I would go, and Bud does a really good job of explaining, but it really just shows where the collapse in the Gators team is this year. It's not in that traditional middle eight where I know Billy Gonzalez, and I'll give Billy Gonzalez credit. You know, his press conferences throughout last week and this week have been chock full of what I think is actual detail and things that they're working on and actual explanation and not just platitudes. But the Gators, if you look at this, are just absolutely falling apart in the fourth quarter. And I think that's indicative of why they're 3-5. Go ahead, Corey.
Yeah. Losing is just starts at the top, man. The loser vibes, bro. Like, you know, when you play with skill, good luck will happen. When you don't coach with skill, mm-hmm. bad luck will happen, bro. That's just what it is, man. But, on the Eugene Wilson thing, like, that's just more of a testament of, you know, these guys come in as freshmen. They don't just lose these skills, these high phenomenal prospects that we come in and see, you know, have these crazy good freshman years. Though that don't just diminish and fade away. You know, that's the Eugene Wilson that we should have been seeing the entire time he's been at UF. He was used wrong. He was underutilized. He wasn't developed properly. He wasn't put in a position to expose his best skill sets. You know, people were ready to dispose of Eugene Wilson for the younger receivers with the mindset that he had lost some skills or he wasn't performing well. No, Eugene Wilson wasn't put in position to make plays. He wasn't used in the right manner. The schools you go to, the coaches you choose, and who you get developed, these players don't just be bust. And it's not just at the pro level, it's at the high school level as well. Who's developing you, who's coaching you, the offenses you play in is going to determine if they pull the best out of your skills. These recruiting services, they don't miss on five stars a lot. They don't. They don't miss on high four stars a lot. Like, it's proven that they're accurate. So when a player gets to a school and they show a lot of promise their freshman year and then they diminish, it's the coaching. It's the system. Show some grace. If players want to transfer or leave, you just got to be a little bit open-minded, but Eugene Wilson did what Eugene Wilson could do. We've been saying for a long time. He could run the whole route tree. He could go down the field. He's not some gadget player. You just got to put him in position to make plays, and he's going to make plays.
Yeah. Eugene Wilson, 11 targets, 9 receptions, 121 yards. It's 13.4 yards per reception, 1 touchdown. The rest of the Gators only get 45 yards, and that's made up of J. Michael Stervin, Jaden Baugh, and Dallas Wilson. Dallas Wilson out for the year, had surgery today on his foot. But Amir Jackson and Hayden Hansen were the only two tight ends targeted in this game, and that was 3 of the 24 targets. So definitely a larger volume to the wide receivers, which I think is to be expected when you promote the wide receiver coach to head coach and, you know, utilizing the strengths of what you have.
Yeah, and real quick on the tinfoil hats with Dallas Wilson. Saw people saying he's sitting out to transfer. Does he transfer? I don't know. But he's not sitting out to preserve. First off,
imagine having surgery just to play a game. You know?
I don't know. I don't know what you think, but this is not a 4-year talent. This is a enjoy your 3 and then start bragging about where he gets drafted. That's the kind of player we're talking about. So, like, preserving a year, you're already sounding foolish. But this is – so, basically, he hurt his foot in that first open – or it wasn't open. It was open to – it was our Florida Victorious member day. But it was the first practice in the swamp. Hurt his foot. They realized, hey, you're gonna need surgery. But whenever you have the surgery, you're going to be out for the year. So, they took the route of put it in the cast, put him in the boot, see how much it can heal, go through some rehab, and then play, knowing that at some point it's going to break and you're going to need surgery. So he made the decision along with Florida's training staff to, like, hey, let's not do the surgery in August. Let's try to see if we can get it back to a certain point and I can play some this year. But it was always essentially, for lack of a better term, like a ticking time bomb. Like, he was going to need surgery from the injury back in August. And you did as much as you could do to try to get him to a place where he could play. But literally playing all year on a foot that they knew he was going to have surgery on.
Yeah. Also, too, I think he's one of the kids that sticks. Like, a lot of reasons he came from Oregon was personal reasons that, you know, that's close to him. I don't foresee him being one of the guys that'll leave. It'll have to be an absolutely crazy hire, in my opinion. Anything could happen, but. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's one of those guys.
No, that's my guy. He's going to shine. You can hire me. I'll be the head coach. Call passes to 3, 8, and 6 all day long.
Yeah, bro. Like just hit Axe Madden, bro. You can't go wrong, man.
4 verts.
Yeah.
I will have Twitter script my first drive every week.
I like that.
Crowdsourcing. I like it.
I'm going to crowdsource everybody to like my comment about a triple reverse on the first play. Mm.
Quadruple reverse.
Yes. Quintuple reverse. How do we just keep going?
Rugby. Let's play rugby. We'll start throwing the ball. Play rugby.
Yeah. No, I certainly saw the receivers, and, you know, I wish the best to Dallas Wilson. I hope that he's back next year. I think that he's an amazing talent. Unfortunate circumstance for him, but the idea that people thought that he was sitting out and elected to have surgery is just nuts.
Twitter's on Twitter.
Well wishes to Dallas Wilson, but, you know, unfortunate. You know, you've lost Aiden Mizell for a good part of this season to a foot injury. You lost Caleb Banks for a foot injury, and now Dallas Wilson for a foot injury, and I'm sure I'm missing others. We got to figure out our feet situation.
Somebody on Twitter put a boot on the Jumpman logo, and I lost it. I real deal. You know when you say you type LOL, like you type LOL, but you're never really laughing. That was a real life laugh out loud when I saw that.
Hilarious. Injury bugs have been vicious this year for sure.
Yeah, definitely unfortunate injuries and some long-term injuries. Gators on the ground, 128 yards. Jaden Baugh, 72 yards on 15 attempts. KD Daniels, 20 yards on 6 attempts. And DJ Lagway, 10 attempts for 36 yards. He did have a fumble. He recovered that fumble. And then Jaden Baugh did have a touchdown.
Used a lot more of the running game like quarterback design, quarterback runs. Some I saw people weren't happy about, but I feel like you just need to show it. You take some good with some bad in that. The fourth
down. He hasn't really done it in a year and a half, right? I mean, and yeah, I don't even know. Did he do it a lot at Willis High School too, or
he did it? He did it regularly.
A lot of his runs were like broken down plays, like where he just kind of like just took off. He was also significantly bigger than everyone he played against at Willis.
Yeah.
I think I forgot what I was about to say. I had a take on this running thing. I forgot what it was. Carry on.
The fourth and one, everyone was like, everyone's bad. DJ's getting like dragged on Twitter. It's wild. But like the fourth and one wasn't a read. It was not an RPO. It was just a handoff. And I saw a ton of, he's an idiot. He should have tucked it and taken it outside. I'm like, that's cool. But that's not the play.
Yeah. Bro, this is not a real place, man. This internet world, bro. It's like, you know, a lot of offensive coordinators with no idea what the play actually is, man.
Yeah, and if he would have done a somersault over the line, he probably would have scored too.
Well, he should have done that, Nick. Play call. You should, why should've don't you draw up a somersault?
So that's AAX, right trigger, left. Get you to the somersault.
I think one of the reasons he just haven't run, I don't know how healthy his lower body is, right? There's a calf thing there. Hamstring was buggy last year. I don't know if that's one of the reasons why you just don't run him a lot, you know? Just injuries, you know? He hasn't been the healthiest. He missed, you know, the entire offseason because of injuries. So, it just, you know, we haven't had a healthy quarterback to like really infuse a lot of quarterback runs, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And
well, I think you need to show it. I think you need to show it, even if it's not successful.
For sure.
If he's able to do it, you show it. Just putting it on film makes defenses prepare and then play you differently.
I like that draw they did with it. So the draw was really good. Like when he drops back out of the
quick, empty.
Yeah. So I'm not mad at it, but I understood why, like, you know, earlier, even last year, they didn't really run him a ton, you know, and he got injured running the ball, right? That's when he hurt his hamstring. So I understand why they was trying to protect him from running the ball as much, because he's injury prone at this point.
Yeah, just you saw the game last Saturday, and you just kind of saw some glimpses of what could have been if you use some of the Ferraris that Corey talked about, and we just chose not to. We chose to use the Pinto and the 88 Corolla.
Ooh, 88 Corolla.
The brown one. Yo,
a Pinto is wild. I haven't heard Pinto in a long time. Pinto is showing our age a little bit, man. The kids are like, a Pinto? What's that? A
Pinto bean? That's at Moe's.
A 96 Mazda Protege? I don't know. Like,
I had that car.
Well, you know what? A Pinto or a
Protege? No, 96 Protege, not a Pinto, bro. I didn't have a Pinto.
I had a 99 Protege.
Wow, look at us, Protege boys, man.
Yeah, who would have known we were both Proteges?
Just vibing out, man.
Lagley, 15-24, 166 yards, 6.9 yards per attempt, one touchdown, no interceptions. Not a great overall score from Pro Football Focus. Obviously had the fumble, did recover that fumble as well. Just one drop by the wide receivers in this game. One sack, pressured 9 times in this game. A lot of commentary on Lagway, on Tramell Jones, and kind of where the Gators are at right now. I don't think that you're going to make a change now, but I think there could be some competition next year, and I think it's owed to the Florida Gators to have a competition at that position next year.
Yeah, it's the Gators tradition. It's tradition. It's a thing. It's a vibe. This is what we do.
Yeah.
So of course, you know, we just did this with Lagway and Mertz. You know,
we did.
Just...
Yeah. You know, I know it is. I mean, it's true, but you know,
it's crazy though.
Florida had struggled at the quarterback position for the better part of 10 years since Will Grier decided that he wanted to go to the GNC.
I think Mulligan.
Besides Kyle Trask, I'm sorry.
Correct.
Besides Kyle Trask. other than that. And that was an injury casualty. Yeah.
It's a complete nutrition, not a GNC.
Well, whatever. You get the idea.
No, I think DJ regressed big time, man. He came in last year, you know, played with injuries, trying to carry us on our back to get, you know, to a bowl game, which he did. But he showed a lot of flashes. He showed a lot of things he needed to work on last year as well. But the footwork looks egregious in the game, you know, and that just comes from development. You know, he missed his entire offseason dealing with injuries. And at one point, we will talk about just the management of last offseason too and what that looked like, right? Because I don't think it was managed properly, you know, how they took care of a few things. But, you know, he missed a guy that needed, you know, development, you know, after the first season. Teams get tape on you. They know what you're good at. And you start seeing the tail end of last year. They knew DJ's tendencies and, you know, things he wanted to do and also tendencies of the offense. But he missed the whole offseason of development, you know, didn't get anything. And also, I just don't think he's with the greatest developers, you know. The school has a responsibility. Like, these players are coming to the University of Florida to be coached by the best, and they're told that they're going to be put in their hands, you know, to develop their skills for the next level. I don't think O'Hara, I don't think Billy Napier has the resume to be teaching quarterbacks at the University of Florida. I think we took a five-star quarterback and we put it in the hands of just taking a Mercedes and putting it in a shade tree mechanics under his tree to be fixed. These guys just didn't have what it takes to develop a quarterback of that nature, and we're just seeing it. He regressed like other players. There hasn't been a player on offense that has come as a freshman and has been developed to go to the NFL. Not one that's been developed from day one. You know, you go to tight end, you go to receiver, you go to quarterback, you go to any position, you're not going to see any player that came as a freshman to William Napier and got to where he's at now in year four and say, yeah, he was developed well as a recruit from high school all the way to pro. It was pure negligence. So yeah. I think the quarterback position, like while people saying Tremell Jones, like if DJ isn't prepared, you know, if Mertz wasn't good enough and prepared, if, you know, Richardson wasn't good enough and prepared, Tremell Jones is not about to be prepared. Mm-hmm. It's not about to happen. Just
No. I saw him throw against LIU. He's clearly better.
Corey, I echo your sentiment and wholeheartedly agree. If you look at the people that have gone to the NFL, you know, Montrell Johnson was maybe one of the better players, and he came over from Louisiana, and Jaden Ball certainly looks like he's NFL bound, you know, but from top to bottom, from a skill position perspective, the players that he's picked out and chosen, not the ones that he had inherited, you know, the Austin Barbers and, you know, some of those guys, it's tough to look at somebody that got significantly better during the tenure. And it's easy to want a quarterback challenge, and I want one. I want Florida to excel at the quarterback position. I think that Florida has every opportunity, and there's no shortage of quarterbacks that are out there that can toss the rock and make some of those throws. But where we've seen Florida progress or regress, it's disappointing. And you can blame the player. You can blame a lot of different externalities and a lot of other things going on. Ultimately, preparation comes down to the way that you practice, the way that you learn and develop, and putting yourself in an opportunity to be successful. And if you don't have those three things, that's not on the player. That's on the coach that is instilling that in them. Now, the player has to execute on game day, but execution comes from repetition of doing it over and over and over and over again. And that means that you're not making changes or coaching, right? If you're not throwing off your front foot and you're not stepping into your throws, then that's something that needs to be called out and addressed. But habits form by not being called out on wrong action. And that's what's so disappointing, because we came in and thought that it would be better and it would be different, right? And that Anthony Richardson, maybe there are some issues with, you know, him, you know, wanting to just go to the NFL year one. And then Graham Mertz, you're like, okay, oh, this is better than we thought. And then DJ Lagway's there, and you're like, oh, wow. You know, we finally have a guy that gets it. And year two has been, I mean, nothing short of a D-plus rating. And that's disappointing. Five stars don't do that.
Yeah.
D is for disappointing.
D is for disappointing.
This guy, man. Yeah, it's I mean, hindsight is always 20/20, but sure. You know, it's just one side of the ball, like the defensive side of the ball, which is not Napier's thing. Like, those guys are developing and getting better. Like, that side of the ball is impressive. Even from a receiver standpoint, like, our receivers aren't developing into what they brought in as high school prospects. Like, Ricky Pearsall's transfer. You know, all of our best receivers are transfers. Like, the guys that we're bringing in, they're shelved. Like, Aiden Mizell is being robbed of his talents. I'm going to just keep it a bean. He's being robbed of what he brings to the table. They're not putting that kid in a position to go be a speedster and burn things downfield and put up production. You know, they got him on the bench and got tight ends on the field. Like, these guys aren't being – I'm not putting that on Billy G because I think them guys can play. I just think it's the offense and the system, you know. And most of these guys aren't living up to their recruiting rankings. Not because they can't play. Tank Hawkins is a Ferrari, and we haven't seen him open that engine up yet. Like, it's criminal. Yeah. Like, for real, for real.
Yeah.
Ah, I mean, a lot of him being on the bench is because he's hurt.
Who, myself?
He's been hurt.
Everybody's hurt.
He's
not hurt and not being
used. We need a new orthopedist, right? Is that what a foot doctor is?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Orthopedist is a foot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just had to take Harlem to one a few weeks ago. So,
yeah. So we need a new orthopedist. No offense to the orthopedist. I'm sure he's a big fan of the show, but it's time. No offense.
He firing the doctors.
You know
now,
more about
man.
Feet than I do. Oh, yeah. Man.
The doctor just do the MRIs, bro. He ain't on the field. He ain't really part of the team. Just when they break something, that's when they see equipment.
Something's happening. I don't know what it is. We got a tragic issue with feet.
He said niggas starting to morph into Pat Dooley.
Nick's on mute.
Oh, man.
That's tough. That's a tough take.
That's a real tough take.
Trying to do better for you, Matt. Oh, jeez.
But the biggest difference is Nick's still on the air right now.
Yo. Oh, man. Hey, tell Pat we hire him, man. That's hilarious.
He caught a stray. He didn't deserve it. He didn't deserve it. All right. They did, but, you know.
Blame Matt.
Oh, all right. 11 guys on the field, though. No procedural penalties.
Hey. Coach Matt.
Not a lot of running back and forth. Podiatrist. That's what
it is. Podiatrist. So that's what it is.
Podiatrist. Yeah.
Shout out to Micah Pounders.
I know orthopedists sound wrong. An orthopedist would be somebody that does surgery, like an orthopedic surgeon. Podiatrist.
I took my son to orthopedic. Maybe they're both. Sometimes they're in the same office.
In bones, joints, and ligaments.
Yeah.
So a new orthopedist too. We're kind of both right.
Yeah.
Podiatrist is just a foot guy, and orthopedist is the bone guy. Your foot is made up of bones, if I remember correctly, from anatomy and physiology class.
There you go.
But shout out to Micah.
Podiatrist, foot guy,
dubster,
so weirdo.
37, a big involvement yesterday and last night's show. Our guys just ain't developing like they need to. That's right. And less motion. Yeah, that's what we were getting at. A lot less motion in this offense. Play call seemed to get in on time, able to set themselves, move a little bit quicker. So
what the hell is Billy doing? Like, what was Billy doing? Like, it just seemed to function.
What was he standing by himself the whole time doing?
Farting?
Just reading the Waffle House menu the whole time.
Ain't want nobody to smell
farting
his fart,
bro. Farting is crazy. Come on.
Farting is nuts. All right, we've got 13 minutes before.
Let me find out Billy just had gas, bro. All right, man. No more jokes.
We have Terry Jackson joining the show in 13 minutes, so I want to get onto the defensive side of the ball. Before we do that, I do want to give a shout-out to our friends over at Home Field Apparel. Go visit homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code Stadium and Gale. Get you 20% off of your first order and free shipping. Anything that you want for the University of Florida, vintage logo-wise, they have 6 or 7 pages worth that you can go check out. It's officially the Christmas season, the gift-giving season, so go check them out. They've got over 100 different schools, and I believe the Indianapolis Colts of all schools. So if you've got a friend, family, loved one, a coworker, that code works across the entire website. So use promo code Stadium and you get 15% or 20% off of your order. All right, guys, defensive side of the ball, 2 sacks in this game. Georgia had only allowed 1 up till this point in the season. So get after Gunnar Stockton twice, 1 QB hit, 13 hurries. I thought the defense played as well. You give up 24 points. Yes, the first drive and the touchdown in the fourth quarter, certainly not the way that you want it to go. But ultimately, I thought the defense played played pretty well. Corey, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought they played well. It was a couple instances where I thought we should have just been dialed in a little bit more to where Branch was at, you know, making sure linebackers is not on him, maybe even doubling him and bracketing him sometimes would have made sense, you know, especially on like third and longs. But outside of that, man, some of the the ball awareness too, just some of the safety play was just such. But I thought Thornton played well in certain cases.
Highest ranked defender in the game.
Who, Thornton?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I thought he played well, but it's just some tackling here and there. I don't like my safety's ankle biting, and you know, ball awareness got a little be a little bit better for 14 on the back end when we get up that touchdown. But overall, man, the defense has just been playing lights out, you know, regardless of the injuries, because we're missing a lot of people on that side of the ball, and you wouldn't tell when you cut on the tape, man. So I don't have a lot of quarrels. It's just when Bowen's breaks for that last run, I'm just like, bro, I need a safety right there. What 43 at? 43 would have smacked Bowens when he came through the hole. I just know it. Put 43 on the field. He got to play more, bro. I thought he earned playing time in Mississippi State. 4 snaps. Game. 4 snaps is criminal.
Played just 4 snaps in this game. Yep.
That's my overall take, man. I thought they played well. You know, they played good enough for us to win the football game. Could have played better. You could always play better, but overall, Ron Roberts' group has been solid this year, and they kept us in football games, man. So, no complaints. Outside of my few complaints.
Outside of the ones I enumerated, no other complaints.
Yeah. Other than the grievances I had previously aired, no grievances. Looking at, I think, buddy, Ruben Chinyelu is in a different jersey. His jersey got ripped straight down the center. I don't know if I've ever seen a jersey rip like that. But basketball season, marathon, not a sprint. Florida was up like 12 at one point.
Yeah,
so what's the score?
2 as we're 46-42.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, we can come back. We've not been shooting the rock well.
Buddy, this is watching the game. Can you put any more? Like, they're running out of room to put advertisements on the
court. Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, the jerseys is next. They're going to look like a NASCAR soon.
Well, why are these basketball players wearing pants? Oh, there's more room for jerseys. That's more room for sponsors.
That's facts. Dark Horse Herbs or Nick?
Dark Horse. Just the picture again, Nick.
That picture's nuts.
Dark Horse Herbs or Nick? Urban Meyer or Nick Saban? Dark Horse. I don't see it. I don't see them as being
$2, bro. These
he means me. We've had both me and Urban Meyer on the show, and only one of us has expressed any interest in coaching, and that was me.
Correct.
Especially when I see the buyouts.
I think LSU fans think that they might get Nick Saban. I just don't think that they will.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
To come out of retirement and move to Baton Rouge is mental illness.
Well, he was there before.
Like. Dude.
20 years ago.
Won a national championship.
20 years ago.
Nick Saban doesn't have any interest in coaching because he doesn't have complete autonomous control over the players anymore. He made that clear.
Everybody could cheat now.
That's right.
The best tweet Corey's ever had was tying in Nick Saban retiring the same year the Dodge Charger.
That thing went like 5-time platinum, bro. That thing went crazy. It was a simple tweet. I didn't think that was about to go crazy. Like, that went absolute crazy, man.
It just slapped.
Yeah. What'd you guys think of the Jordan Castell forward pass, not fumble?
Technically, it was
I thought it was a pass.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Ron Roberts channeling his inner Todd Grantham. Just engage eight. Bring everyone.
Yeah. That Castell blitz was time.
From St. Augustine just downhill.
Bring the safety.
I mean, Jordan Castell read that play so well. He's there a couple milliseconds earlier, and that's a fumble.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Just overall, you know, they had an opportunity to win. It wasn't on the defense.
No, not at all, man. Defense played well. But it just Georgia's such a second half team, man. It just winner vibes, bro. It just that's the difference between winners and losers is what we saw, you know, out there, bro. Like they never panicked. The players just stayed locked in. Gunnar Stockton made the play. He's not some phenomenal player, but he made plays when they were there. You know, we need it's several times where we had a yard to get. You know, we had a about to move the sticks and we dropped one. We got a wide open receiver and we just throw the ball a little short. We all debating if it was a catch, and then most of us do think it was a catch. But you know, winning programs, they make those plays happen, man. And when you have, you know, the chemistry of losing in the locker room, like you find a way to lose. Winners find a way to win. Right now, we just, you know, this is not a winning regime. And it's that aura is still in the locker room a little bit. It got better. It felt a little better. It looked a little better, right? You know, they executed a little better, but that loser aura is still hanging around a little bit.
Man, when Devin Moore had the interception, I thought, hey, this game might go our way. Might be able to ruin Georgia's season.
Shots. Yeah, I don't know what Kirby's done. They get a lot of calls that go their way.
They do.
Yeah.
I still don't think that was a ball on the ground.
That ball never touched the ground, man.
I just don't know if there was enough to overturn the fumble on a forward pass.
Yeah, that's the
I hate the call on the field and indisputable evidence.
Yeah, I could see that. They did call the fumble on the field. I could see it, but I just thought he had, like, technically his arms going forward and the ball still in his hand. It wasn't really moving around. I don't want to keep spinning. It's time to get another coach, man. You know, this season's a wash. Like, people are making too much of the game at this point, brother. This is, you know, we got Kentucky on the way. We should put hands and feet on them folks. We should get a couple more wins down the stretch here, which is cool. Yep.
Speaking of wins, we just lost him. We'll come back in a second. Terry Jackson was hanging out. Oh, there he is. All right, we're going to welcome Terry Jackson onto the show as he gets set up. Let's get one time for our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks. Go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. Get a cool cup like this one. One like Corey has. Nick has maybe got one. Oh, there he is. Go check out Game Time Sidekicks. A Gator fan in Knoxville, Tennessee creates great cups that'll keep your hot drinks hot, cold drinks cold. Go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. Use promo code STADIUM15. You get 15% off of your order. Again, GameTimeSidekicks.com, promo code STADIUM15. And with that, we're going to welcome a national champion, Florida Gators running back, Terry Jackson, to the show. Terry, it is a pleasure to have you on today.
What's happening? How y'all doing?
What's up, bro?
Very good.
Doing great, man. Thanks for pulling up, man.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Most definitely. It's all good.
Real quick, Terry, you Gainesville native?
Yes, sir.
PK Young. Had a friend who went to PK Young. Did they call you guys lab rats back then, or is that a newer thing?
Probably so. They called us some everything. They probably called us a little something like that. Who'd you know from the PK? Who's the Blue Wave?
His name is Kaysen Self. He is my age, so he's 36.
Okay. Y'all babies.
Oh, thank you. all of this white chin hair. Thanks you for calling me a baby. Thank you. Might get carded the next time I buy beer, Dan.
That's right. well, Terry and I ran into each other after the Mississippi State game. He was there with Riedel, and Riedel backed into me because he wasn't paying attention, got the chance to meet Terry. And Terry graciously decided to join the program today. And Terry, obviously, maybe not obviously for everybody. His dad was an illustrious athlete at the University of Florida, Willie Jackson. His brother, Willie Jackson Jr., was an All-American that played for the Gators and also played in the NFL. Nick mentioned went to PK Young. Terry, I know it's in your nature. You grew up a Gator fan, grew up in Gainesville, but talk just a little bit about your recruiting journey and what that was like, getting recruited by Steve Spurrier in the mid-90s there.
Yeah, 94, I think we claimed that we had 9 qual. We say we probably the best class in history. We weren't very heralded great, but we had that was Jacquez, Ike, Riedel, Travis, Jamie Richardson, you know, that set of receivers, Fred Taylor, myself, Mike Peterson, Ed Chester. I mean, it was so many more names of guys that we just, you know, we thought we made our mark. I was the last one to actually sign that scholarship. I was about to sign and go to Duke. Coach Zook called me and said, Terry, hold on. We're gonna try to find something for you. And at the last, like I think a day or two before signing day, he called me and said, we found a scholarship for you. So, I mean, that's where I want to go. But I said, if I ain't going to go to where I want to go, let me go to one of these smart schools and do that thing. And maybe they'll let me walk on the basketball team. And hey, but you know, the rest is here. See, I got that last scholarship. It's where I want to be. And it was I want to win. And I saw the trajectory with Coach Spurrier and those guys were doing, and I want to win. And if you guys hadn't heard the stories when Coach Spurrier recruited, it was like, hey, we'd love to have you if you come, if we can find a spot for you. But if not, we're going to beat you. You know, that's what he said. If not, we're going to beat you. So, I mean, he told me, Terry, like you, I don't know what position you'll play if you come offense or defense. We got a lot of fast guys. We got a lot of 4-3 guys who we got already. So hopefully we can find something for you. But, I mean, he just had his confidence.
Got a good Spurrier impression.
Thank you. We all do. I think every former player got a little bit of it. We heard it enough, and it was fun. It's fun. Very funny guy. But, yeah, it was a great time to be a Gator. Fun, fast, confidence, and I think that's what we all kind of, you know, whether we coach or whatever we do, we have that about it, that flair about us.
Well, in doing that process, because Fred Taylor's there, like, are you thinking about Fred Taylor coming in as a running back, and what is Steve Spurrier selling, you know, as far as playing time, dual running back system, like, what's that whole pitch like?
Well, like I said, we were all competitors. We all played different positions. When I came, I started off on defense. I was on defense when I first got to Florida. And I think most of our class were all athletes. Well, that's Mike Pete. Mike Pete was a quarterback in high school. Fred was probably the only one a pure running back. I saw Fred and Riedel at a track meet at the Florida Relays our senior year. And I saw Fred, you know, he was all these muscles and running a 10-5, 10, whatever he running, we didn't run the 10-2. I looked at Fred. I said, okay, I see why they don't got a scholarship for me. I can see that. I mean, he looked like a grown man, but like I said, and that was the beautiful thing about us back then, playing time. We just give me a shot on the field, and I'm gonna play. I ain't worried about that. Just get me on the field somewhere, and I'm gonna do what I got to do. So I think we don't worry about the competition. I mean, that's what makes us good. That's what made us good. We're not worried about competition and what you think you are. We're gonna all find a spot in there, and then Spurrier is gonna put whoever on the field who could execute what he wanted executed. He ain't care who he played. He was like, if you do what I tell you to do, it don't matter. We're gonna be good. We're gonna score a touchdown. So that was his mindset. So that radiated and that pervaded to the rest of us.
What was his pregame like? Like, you see all these coaches, like, fiery pregame speeches. What was like, you guys, hey, Tennessee's here. It's September. What was the head ball coach like in the locker room 10 minutes before kickoff?
Let's get him, guys. Go talk to your coaches. I mean, it wasn't every week. He was a different coach would have the opportunity to talk to us before the game, but basically do the hype speech. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really every week. It'd be a different coach who would have that opportunity to kind of be our hype coach. He wasn't. Hey, we're gonna go out there and win focused, and we knew how to go. I mean, we Florida guys. We had some Miami guys on the team, so it stayed. The locker room stayed lit and ready. It's Florida people. We were always ready to go. You didn't have to do much to get us ready to play.
Terry, talk to us. So you redshirt your freshman year. You know, you said you came in on defense. You were a safety. I guess, did you practice at safety your freshman year when you were redshirting?
Yep. I played. It was called a nickel strong safety, like that little gator back position with Ben Hanks, Darren Hambrick, Pat Lowe. I was at that position. And then me and Mike Pete switched. He went to that position. And I think I went to strong safety for like a week or two. And I think it was like a spring practice that next year. I think Fred, Eli, everybody was hurt. And Coach Franks, Carl Franks, was our running back coach, who ended up going to be the head coach of Duke. Carl Franks said, "Terry, everybody hurt over here. We need somebody to come get a." They gave me a draw. I think I got like 6, 7, 8 yards, ran somebody over, said, "You're on offense now." And it just happened just like that. And I was on offense. But then when some guys got hurt, I think like my sophomore year, Javon and Mike Pete got hurt, so I went and played both ways against Georgia, I think in 97, 96. So I was still able to do a little bit of that when needed, but, yep, that was how it happened.
That's nuts. And then in that memorable 138-yard, 3-touchdown game against Kentucky, what was that experience like for you?
Awesome. I mean, that's when the game, you know, a year in, year two in the, college, you start feeling like it's like high school, a little league all over again. You just got a feeling, and we just had so many talented guys. And our system was so, I think, wide open and new to people. You know, they would play base against a 3 wide receiver set. So now these linebackers, you get them in space. And now, so it just made it a little bit easier for us to kind of get some yards. But it was an awesome experience. I just felt like it was like high school all over again, and let's do this every week. And it got to the point where, you know, you see all these guys with stats now, and I go back and think, well, I mean, we literally could take – we should take ourselves out of the game. We didn't even play most of the second half. So, yeah. I mean, we could have a whole lot – I mean, like, you look at the stats, myself, Fred, Eli, we could have had a whole lot more stats, but we would take ourselves out. Like, well, they would take – at the second, third quarter, we wouldn't play anymore.
Yeah, and all three of you guys have good careers in the NFL. Go ahead, Nick.
That's – I'm just thinking, like, if – How quickly my mind would turn on to what's going on in Midtown if Coach is taking me out in the second, third quarter. I'm like, all right, let's get the party ready in my mind.
the purple portraits is ready.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, man, it's like, get my table ready at the Purple Porpoise.
Time to go to Clark U. I don't remember.
Calico Jacks, what's happening? Those times when you were at Florida, what was it like? Because I think that you were part of, you know, kind of like the beginning of really building what we now call the Gator Standard. Coach gets there in 90. The school is still on probation, and Florida football is kind of like a sleeping giant. What was it like to kind of be there for the beginning of really the kind of rich tradition and the expectations that we have now for the Gators?
Well, like you said, you started, so I'm a Gator. So I grew up, I'm in Gainesville. So I grew up, you know, going to games, selling Coke, being at the game, making Cokes in the stadium. My dad would take us to sometimes, and a lot of his friends were on the coaching staff. And so I would watch, you know, James Jones, John L. Neal, Lorenzo Hampton. I mean, I obviously was, you know, over at PK Young in the field talking about, I'm John L. Or I'm, you know, so I'm watching those guys, loving. So to me, that's prime Gator football. Ricky Natil, Kerwin Bell. That's when it was really starting to really happen on the national level for the Gators. And I think that built into when Coach Spurrier got there doing what he does best, and that's just opening up the offense. And everybody was all running back you during that time. I mean, everybody had great running backs. And opening it up to that wide open system when you got 3 receivers out there, that 11 look out there, and that personnel change that really kind of shocked and changed the Southeastern Conference. So I mean, when it did that, it just kind of, now what we got right now, wide open, scoring a lot of points. I think that was which Coach Spurrier bought, and they bought a air of winning, like that confidence, knowing that we're going to win. The expectation is to win, and not just win, but to beat you. Score as many points as you can and make you not want to play us, and you have a little fear in the Gators. You know, like I said, growing up, we used to lose some games. You go to Georgia and go to those games. It's cold. We used to lose the games. It was a close game against Georgia. I work out with Garrison Hirsch right now, and I tease him all the time. I tell him, hey, man, you the Gators are the reason you ain't win the Heisman. He never beat us. And those guys, so we went for a long time just dominating a lot of people and garner a lot of hate. A lot of people don't like us our age because we used to beat everybody. And again, like all those teams, the LSU, the Georgia, and I know young people don't know what this means, like, but those schools, they were our homecoming type games. We knew we were going to beat them by 30 points.
I said this last week, Terry.
They were like our homecoming games, and I laugh, and we watch it now. It's a little different, but I understand it. It's changed a lot, and I think Coach Spurrier brought that winning that you're supposed to win. You're in the SEC. You got all this talent in the South. Everybody going down to Miami. Everybody coming to Florida to get all the players out of here because everybody saw, I think, what we did. I think even our Miami guys were different than what we did, you know, during that time. And then with Urban, then they're coming. He became more of a national recruiter, getting the best in Florida, but then becoming a national recruiter. I was on that staff as well. And he just dominated kind of just the recruiting and everything. But I think the standard is that standard of winning and knowing you're going to win and not just hoping you win was what Spurrier started in the 90s.
Can you speak on most championship teams? Like, everybody always speak about Spurrier offense, but the defense is They was killer as well, bro. Like, big fan of Javon Curse, Johnny Rutledge, the guys that we had on that defense was absolutely crazy. Can you speak to the practice culture and the competitiveness of Spurrier during that era?
Well, it was practice was a competition. You know, you going ones versus twos. I mean, the ones versus twos was might as well been a ones versus ones. Like, when I got to the league, I used to look at some of the guys on our team. I played in California, and they would go get a lot. And if anybody from Cal watched, then Cal's and Stanford schools, we had a lot of the guys. I said, man, everybody on my team in college is better than y'all. Like, what y'all got out here? You know, not they weren't great players or good players, but just the athleticism of, like, we had our linebackers ran 4.4s and 4.3s. So it was never a break. Even if you got ones against threes, everybody's trying to get it. Everybody thinking they should start. Wasn't no animosity, but everybody thought they was the best player out on the field. So you always competing every day. The scout team, I remember, who was it? One of my freshman year, we were playing, I think, going into like that bowl season. I think you had Ellis Johnson, Henry McMillan, Kevin Carr. Like, you had that D line was absolutely amazing. And they got mad at some of the running backs. I think at the time, Terrence Foy was a really good player, running back at that time. And he's just killing the defense. They're getting mad at him, and then it just became a real scrimmage, like on a Wednesday or Thursday when you're supposed to be settling down. And it was just fun. It was just fun to be around. We competing, and sometimes guys on the defense would do a little too much, and Coach Spurrier, like the scout defense, would do a little too much, and Coach Spurrier would get mad, and it became like a little contest and a little back and forth. So it was fun. We had a good time. We played fast, and because we were competing all the time. We went back to the room, played the video games, compete. We just never stopped competing.
Mm-hmm. Terry, you were a academic All-American, but you're also a team captain there and with the 49ers for a number of years. Has leadership always come pretty natural to you? Or talk about leading both with the Gators, which had a lot of alphas, and being a leader requires, you know, having tough conversations and not only being a good example, but being tough on some guys, right? Talk to us a little bit about that and kind of you assimilating into that role.
Yeah, I think great team, and if you know any great team, and great teams are player led. In college, it takes time to kind of learn that. I mean, because we're a lot younger, and you want to be one of the guys. I think that was the difference. I think in the 96 team, we had some of those older guys who really didn't care, and they would beat up the younger, like, get us in line. If we weren't doing something in workouts in the offseason and make sure everybody were doing things, guys like Lawrence Wright, you know, Ben Hanks, those type of guys, Mark Campbell, who would kind of, hey, if y'all ain't doing, I wasn't an in-the-face type of leader. I was like, hey, I'm going to work hard. You know I'm going to work hard, everybody. I'm not getting in trouble. Follow my lead that way. You know, we could, this is a short amount of time that we got to a chance to be great, to do something special. Like, I think the biggest regret is that we only won one national title. I think if it was a playoff system, we would have been in every single one for 4 or 5 years. I think we were that talented, that good. I have without a doubt that would have happened. And I think it just gravitated towards me because I did enjoy school. I did enjoy the whole process of being in college, being around people, my teammates, and I kind of knew that kind of what it takes. Somebody has to step up and say, hey, guys, this is what we got to do. I remember giving a speech, I think, my senior year, and some of them still call me this nickname to this day. They call me Captain Hip because I told them in a meeting, and that's just a colloquial term. I said, hey, guys, you know, you're on the University of Florida campus, and a lot of guys got a lot of girlfriends, and it was a little wild back in them days. And I said, hey, it's a short amount of time. Let's win these games, focus in school, stay out of trouble, because you're going to get that hip. It's going to come to you. You ain't got to try too hard, but let's focus. And I guarantee that all going to come to you. If we win, everything going to come to you you want. And to this day, they tease me. They call me that Captain Hip to this day. But I think it was just like I my senior year when I got hurt, I was student body vice president my senior year because I tore my ACL my junior year. Yeah. So I said, man, this football is tough, man. I know I can play in the league. All my friends are going, but let me start. I always knew that there was not just one plan. There's only one plan, and that's I'm going to do something regardless. So let me start developing myself. Let me take care of these opportunities. And I was student body vice president. Like I said, I was a captain on the team, and that's just trying to lead by example, that we can be more than just a football player. We can do a lot of things. We can lead everywhere. We can be leaders around campus. A lot of people looked up to us. So that was kind of how that started. And like I said, when I got to San Francisco, I was a player rep. I was NFLPA rep for our team for 3 years and just kind of gravitated to it because I was, you know, they knew I wasn't going to get in trouble. I think that was one of the reasons I got the scholarship because it was like, hey, at least you're going to keep the team GPA up. Even if you end up being sorry, you can keep the team GPA up.
We're about to go to Duke. Boy, let's get them over here and get this GPA up, man. who's your biggest influence, man, just in life as a young man, football, et cetera? Like, what influenced you the most?
I think my dad and my brother. Just because, I mean, we always competed, and my parents, my mom is like, be the best at everything, not just when you play football, but in the classroom, off the field, on the field, just be the best. And that was kind of all our mindsets. I mean, like I said, when we was home, that's all we did is competed. And having an older brother who was already there, when I got to the team, I knew most of the guys. I was coming to work out, you know, kind of in the off season when I was still in high school over at PK. I remember, I think like after the first year at Florida, one of my teammates, I teased him about it. He told me, he said, man, I ain't think you could play. I thought you got a scholarship because your brother. So, I mean, we got on each other all the time, but I think my brother, my dad, just the example they set of that standard of just being the best.
That's dope.
Go ahead, Nick.
No, you can go ahead.
Did you ever feel like you were in a shadow because of your dad and because of your brother at all, being the younger of the two and trying to break out and kind of carve out your own lane, or what was that like?
No, and people ask that question a lot because I got a lot of friends who got kids or kind of in those type of situations. Not at all. I mean,
yeah,
there's always support because we all believed in each other. We all were the best, right? Like, even if we got, I think to be good in anything, you got that kind of, I guess, delusions of grandeur. Like, I mean, as great as the players on that team were, whether it's Fred Taylor's probably one of the best running backs ever at any level. Talented. I mean, we had got Eugene McCaslin, Robert Gillespie, Ernest Graham, like I say, Terrence Ford, Eli Williams. I mean, it was, these guys were great. Way better athletes than that. But I mean, even then, I'm in my mind, anybody can't see me. They can't do the same things I can do. I mean, I probably can't score 99 run. I mean, like Fred probably can score every play. I know I couldn't do that, but I'm going to get that 3-4. I'm going to average my 6-7 yards, and I'm going to break some too. So, like, I'm going to catch the ball. I'm going to block. I'm going to be where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to be assignment perfect. So, and I'm going to help the team win. And that was kind of my focus too. Like, I want to win. And whatever I got to do to help us win, that's what I'm going to do. And that was my focus. I ain't worried about being in nobody's shadow or breaking record, doing this or doing that.
It's awesome.
Talking a little bit about family, let me know if this sounds like your nephew.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving home, and he denied the charges until I described what I saw. A young man in a cowboy hat, wife beater, sandals, riding a dirt bike on a main street.
Yeah, that sounds like my baby did. That sounds like something he would do. It definitely sounds like something he would do. That does sound like my baby right there.
When I said it, he was like, no, that couldn't have been me. And I described the outfit, and he goes, yeah, you know what? That sounds like me. I saw you over there by the Walmart. He goes, by the Walmart, definitely was me. And I was like, yeah.
That's how that is, baby.
I told him, let's put some closed toe shoes on. If we're riding a dirt bike, let's cover the toes.
I tell him all the time. I don't even know how people get on motorcycles, dirt bikes, mopeds. When I was on staff, I told, you know, I was in, you may be too young for this. When I was, I may have been like in seventh grade, eighth grade. Y'all remember Harvey Thomas? Mm-mm. Harvey Thomas was a starting DN on those in the 90s. I mean, probably would have been a good NFL player. Right on 13th Street by the Taco Bell. University by the Taco Bell. A girl from my high school hit him and broke his leg on a scooter. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I said, I'd never get on a scooter in my life.
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you, T-Jack, when I was at school, so I was at UF from 2006 to 2010, and I used to see all these guys on their scooters, and they were packing two guys on a scoot sometimes. You know, you'd see the Pouncey brothers.
Yeah.
I'm like, absolutely crazy. But he's
like dangerous.
I will walk before I get on a scooter. Sharing a scooter. Man.
Yeah,
that is 600 pounds of twin sharing a scooter. That all best right. Shocks in the world. Best suspension a scooter's ever had.
Man, I used to tell them parents, don't buy them nothing. They can walk. They can get on a bike. Them scooters, it's just dangerous. You're going to get tickets, and it's just dangerous. Because you see how they ride, no helmets, just be out there with no shoes on. Like, it was
zipping all around, yeah.
T-Jack, you cannot be riding nut to butt, though, man. That's crazy.
Hey, but you got this before. This before that real NIL. Now they got cars. They can get an Uber take up from where...
Thank God, man.
Nobody have no money back then like that. So they were just getting, they was doing what they had to do, right?
Like, what's the distance? Like, how many miles do I have to go where I'm like, you know what? I will share. I will get on the back of your scooter.
Bro, they were going from Keys and Springs to the football stadium.
I can walk that.
Well, I mean, we take that brother term really serious. Like, that's my brother. This is my brother. This is my brother. Ain't nothing funny about that. This is my brother, right?
Until he gets happy.
My brother's straddling my back on the back.
This is my brother. And in narrative and in our defense, I mean, it was some, you know, whether you talk about the workouts that those guys in that time went through with Urban them and Mick.
Yeah.
They were doing a lot. They were doing a lot.
Yeah. I'll crawl back to Keys.
But that's what you feel like. You crawling back to your dorm back in them days. That's how hard those workouts were.
Yeah.
Like you really like. Luckily, my first year we were in y'all hall, so we didn't have to go very far. So that wasn't bad.
Rest in peace.
Y'all know where Yon Hall is? Y'all know what Yon Hall is?
Yeah,
it's gone now.
I think there's still the rooms up in there, but it's. Probably when they do this new stadium renovation, it'll all be done. But yeah, that was our dorm. We stayed in the stadium.
It might have been athlete student for some people there living in the stadium.
We live right in the stadium. The food, the dining hall was in the stadium, and everything.
No excuse to be late then.
Oh, we were always late. Because you right there, like I remember one time we Florida boy. It was probably about 45 degrees, and I walked out, and it was raining. I turned right back around. That is just too cold to go to school.
See you tomorrow. See you tomorrow. 45 and rainy.
I had a starter jacket on. I said, no, that is too cold. I can't do that.
Terry, before we wrap up here, man, really appreciate your time. I want to talk to you about that role. In the NFL, I guess you won the 2000 Madden Bowl too. The internet's mm-hmm. telling me, but I want to hear a little bit about your role as director of player and community relations with Urban Meyer. You were at UF for what, 7 years or so in that role?
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about that role. You know, this is before, obviously, these staffs have just ballooned in size. There wasn't as many, you know, nearly as many off the field roles as there are now. Talk to us a little bit about that role and, you know, how, ultimately how you got connected to Urban and move into that role.
So I was just retiring. I think I got cut the last cut. I was going to play my last year in 2006. I got cut that last 2006 in August, September. I think I was on that last cut. And I was living back and forth between obviously Cali and Florida. But most of the time I was still living in Gainesville. So I had several AU basketball teams, and I was doing a lot of community work. And at the time, I think I had started doing a project with the 4A's, the African American Alliance, Accountability Alliance in Gainesville. And we had started a mentorship program, and we were starting a mentorship program. And I had met Urban and told him what we were doing. He wanted to be a part of it. So they were part of a little mentorship program we were doing. And we would meet with the coaching staff at 6 a.m. and me and some men from the community. And we started a mentorship program, and we just kind of hit it off, and he asked me if I wanted to be on the staff. We found a role, and we just and basically invented that role, not really knowing, just being around the guys. Wasn't something I was getting a whole lot of money for. And the time I really didn't care. I was trying to figure, you know, I knew I wanted to still be around the sport, be around the Gators, be around the kids, more importantly, the players at the time, and help them out and navigate what they were kind of going through, but, you know, being through it. And I saw the many pitfalls. And so we came up with that role. And my role was basically to be around the guys, go to their houses, be around them on campus. I used to play video games with them in the office. I would go to their house, whip them in the game. Because like you said, I was Madden champion in 2000. And that was probably one of my greatest accomplishments. That was that's the one I'm pretty it was an individual. I was very proud of that. And two of my toughest nemesis in college were on a video game. It was Eli Williams and Jaquez Green, who ended up winning it 2 years after, was in a fake tournament. But I beat both of them in that tournament. So that's probably it was 24 guys. It was like 36 guys. I beat Ray Minkins. He played with the Jets. And then I beat Derek Bell, a baseball player, in the championship. So that was a great one.
It was some footage of Riedel. I mean, not Riedel, but Quez's Madden championship.
Those were fake. After the year, I was the last real one.
Fake.
No, really, because it was the last one where it was like, it was probably like 36, 40 people in that one. Every year after that, they kind of did like a little celebrity thing. So it was 8 people in the tournament. They just picked 8 people who they thought was kind of named people, and they just said, okay, let's play a little raggedy tournament. So his tournament those are tainted turn. Those ain't real. Everybody, they're not recognized by the real player.
Not recognized by the real winners.
They're not recognized. But it's funny. I still play. Well, you know, I was on a game with Ahmad Black the other day. I played with those guys for years after we finished playing the Pouncies, Ahmad, Percy. I used to whip him for years on the game. But it was just a way to kind of connect with the guys, somebody who came from their world for the most part and could tell them about the league. I mean, and tell them about what to expect. I mean, it's a hard situation. When you're that age and you're on top of the world, they don't listen to a lot. But I had just came from it, so I was still kind of them, right? So it was easy to kind of communicate. And they just, and the more people you could have around, people who can kind of relate, especially in this world, and even now it's way worse, I would suspect, that you can't have enough of guys like that around those guys. And that's one thing that I see, kind of want to maybe getting back into it, because you need more, I think, especially former players who've been through it, who can relate to those guys. And now they got a whole different other set of problems. I love that they're getting money, but that's a whole different other set of problems that I think there's some unseen consequences that nobody's accounting for that, you know, that could affect these kids later on, that we need to get more people around them, surround them with kind of the right people and more people who've been there and done that.
No doubt. You got any, what's your favorite memory from the national championship?
My touchdown. No, I mean, I think, like I said, being a Gator, you know, it's always like, are we really going to win? You know, at that point, when I scored that touchdown, like, we know they ain't coming back at that point. Like, it's over. It's a wrap. We the winners at that point. So that was the moment, like, it was completely over. But I think, you know, Ike's catch and stop, I mean, that was awesome. I mean, just, I mean, every part of the game, I think we knew we were going to win that game. We lost to them probably that week, but we knew we were way better than them. So I, like I said, we had a level of confidence that it, those 3-4 years that we shouldn't lost. I think I played in 3-4 losses my whole career. Meaning some of those games I was hurt, but I only played in like 3-4 losses in 4 years. So we had just had that expectation. So that game in particular, I mean, it was just a fun game. DT got the interception at the end. I mean, it was too many moments. And then just the celebration at the end. I don't think we went to bed that night. Mm. I think we stayed up in New Orleans all night.
Yeah, it does.
I have a funny story I got from somebody. So obviously Coach Spurrier was a national figure at that point in 96. He told the guy he was with, hey, I'm gonna go out. I'm going to go out on Bourbon Street. We're going to see it. And they were like, Coach, I don't think that's a good idea. He goes, no, it's fine. I'm going to put a hat on. Not a visor. I'm going to put a hat. And if the top of my head's, I'm guessing in his mind, if the top of my head's covered, no one will recognize me. He made it a good 6 minutes out on Bourbon Street before getting mobbed and had to make a U-turn back to the hotel.
I believe it. I think I saw him and Miss Jerry out. I don't know if it was that night, but I mean, I'm pretty sure I've seen them on Bourbon Street one of them times. We was there so many times. I'm pretty sure I've seen them there.
I can see Steve with a hand grenade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
One in each hand. What was that month like for you guys? Because you lose to FSU, and then you've kind of got to watch like how stuff plays out.
Mm-hmm.
That like?
It was disappointing after the loss because when you back then, if you lose, it's like, dang, you don't really got a shot. Like a lot of things got to kind of happen. And when we were in Alabama. I mean, we were about to play Alabama. Or who were we about to play in the SEC championship? Whoever we was about to play, but we were in the hotel playing cards. And I think it was with Jake the Snake Miller, Arizona State made that play. Then Jake the Snake made that play. Like, okay, that's one down. And then when D. Lou and me and D. Lou, D. Lou was on staff with us at Florida. He was with Nebraska. He was the one. I didn't realize it was him until he told me, but he made that catch when Nebraska ended up beating who did they end up beating? They beat somebody. And those two games basically set the moment up and down. We just danced and party. We knew we was gonna win the championship after that. So for that time until that game, we actually prepared better. We worked hard because that was the issue with the Nebraska game. We partied. We thought we were gonna beat Nebraska by like 70 points. I don't think we practiced very hard or prepared very hard because we thought we went to Tempe, Arizona. None of us ain't never been out in no Tempe, Arizona. We on a mountain. We in a mountain resort. We got free Tostitos. We they going out to the club. We got like it was an experience. And we've been in practice for like an hour, 30 minutes. We watching film. They're scoring maybe 13, 14, 16 points beating Iowa. So we scoring 50 a game. And that season, if you go back to that season, y'all babies, y'all probably, y'all were little kids, y'all probably.
Like, well, no, I cried after that game, bro.
Every game that year, even Florida State, it was easy. Like, even if it was close, it was easy. It's because we may have been playing around. So we assumed the same thing, and we went into that game. And it didn't dawn on us until, I think, that old Arizona Stadium, both teams walk out by each other. And when we walked past them, they looked like they was already in the NFL. Like, we were like, who are these? This can't be the team we're playing. Like, I'm talking about they were just like, okay, they can't be fast. I mean, the first kickoff, they tore ACL. One of our players tore ACL. The third kickoff, they broke Quez's hip. I mean, it just became like they were on it. They came about business, and we came out there to dance and party, and we thought we were going to win the game. And y'all see what happened. When you're not prepared. Mm-hmm. So I say that to say the next year, the whole offseason, how we worked out, everything we did, and then up into that Florida State game was all business.
Yeah. No, I still remember that 96 game. I still have the hat, I think somewhere at my parents' hat house. Mm-hmm. I was 8 years old, but I remember that Nebraska game. And like Corey said, he cried. I definitely cried. I was 7 years old, staying up late to watch. And I'm like, oh no, because you're not used to Florida losing. And at that point, you're starting to create memories, right? Yeah. And Florida's just so good. And you're just like, oh no. Yeah. And it came back, and obviously, before we get you out of here, we have a good mutual friend with Reed L. Anthony. What's a good Reed L. Anthony story?
I mean, we'd be here all night talking about nuts. About Freakum. I mean, Freakum actually scored. He returned the kick in that game.
Yeah,
I call him Freakum Reed. One time when I was still on defense, he faked me out so good. I just started calling him Freakum Reed. He made me fall down, so I just started calling him Freakum Reed ever since then. But that man, he, just an awesome athlete, great, great teammate. I mean, like I said, I could be here forever talking about Riedel. His raggedy golf swing. But I think just him watching him and Ike there that freshman year, and Fred, it's just true freshmen go out there and compete the way they did with, you know, with the guys we already had, and Jack Jackson and Aubrey Hill, God rest his soul, Chris Doring, who was my high school teammate, and to go out there. And I mean, when we get there, I was just like, man, I remember like our first week that June, when we all got to school as freshmen, we go down, like I said, we competed. Like that week we said, okay, we went out to the track, the infield in the track. And we said, let's go run some routes. And Ike and Riedel ran some routes. I was still doing a little defense that time. And I said, okay, this can't be real. I mean, they just left me by like everybody. They were just like grown men already. And I was just amazed by their ability already. And that was another of those moments. I see why y'all didn't want to give me a scholarship, because these guys are amazing. So I mean, just their skill and that ability at that age. I mean, I was just, you know, always amazed. And watching those guys, I tell this story. He said I'm lying, but we were in class in a tutor session, and he just would not, you know, Riedel, he just would not stop talking. And the tutor was just looking at him like, what is wrong with you? Like, he would just not stop talking and laughing the whole tutor. And I'm like, he sounded like, and Riedel, daddy a mayor, but he was just talking so country. And I'm like, really? I couldn't understand a word. The tutor couldn't understand a word. She just like, what are you saying? So we were just there dying laughing, but great guys. I mean, I just love them as teammates, and we still kick it to this day.
I love it, man. Well, T Jack, we appreciate you for joining the show today, man. Really, really enjoyed chatting with you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for pulling up. Absolutely. Man.
Well, hopefully,
was it a catch? I heard y'all talking about, was it a catch?
It was a catch, man. They robbed us, bro. Hold on.
It was definitely
catch. I can pull this up real quick.
What do you think about, real quick, Terry, while we still got some heat pulling that up?
I was watching it a lot. I thought it was a catch. I mean, I 100%. I mean, I can't see how you didn't see it was a catch. But, I mean, I don't – about referees and good plays and bad – I mean, I've seen a lot of bad calls and a lot of good calls. They just – he was out of position, and he said, okay, how could he have made that play, right? I think in his mind, how could he have made that play? I don't think he really saw it. He just said, let me just call it. They'll review it. But once you review it that way, you got to keep it that way, because right. I don't think – in their defense, I don't think the angle was clear enough or close enough.
Pretty clear. Pretty clear right there.
I mean, I thought it was a catch the whole time, and I saw the hands under it, but mm-hmm. I think in their opinion, they said if there's a little space in there, it could have hit the ground, right? And we got to trust our guy on the field. But I mean, I thought I told Garrison today, and he cussed me out. He said, whatever. But
what do you think about what the University of Florida is right now as a program, and this coaching search that we have going on?
I was very impressed with how they played the other day, the players. I think that, and looking at the guys, they got hurt. I think that's a talented team, a very talented team. I think the prospects, actually, I'm pretty positive about it. You got some good young players. I know it's a different world. You got to keep those players. But I think most of those, you got a lot of homegrown legacy getters who are top players who can help keep that thing together. As far as the coaching search, I think you should really just hire some football people, get in there and let them make those decisions. whether that's a VP or president of football, and just kind of let them, people who know football, who've been around it. I mean, you got guys like Rand Carthon out there. There's a Rand. I mean, there's more people. I mean, you got Gators, right? Who people who are Gators, who are invested and love kind of the Gators and know what they're talking about, getting people like that. I think that makes a difference when you have those type of people. And I think that was a difference with us with Coach Spurrier. He's a Gator, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ain't nobody can out-Gator him. So, you know, the passion is there. That's kind of what you need. So when you talk to it, to me, college sports has got it. I mean, and everybody, it's about the money. I'm okay with everybody getting money. But it's like everybody's chasing a check, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's players, it's coaches, like who wants to really be a Gator? Who wants to be whatever institution that is? Who wants to be a part of that and make them better? And they're not looking to go to the next check. That's the reason I never went nowhere else, because I don't want to go to no other staff and I'm rooting for the Gators. Like, I'm a Gator. Like, it's hard for me to do that, right? Because I only want the Gators to win. I don't care about the mother schools. I mean, unless it's like a friend who's coaching or something, and maybe I might. But, like, my point is, I think they need to really look, when I say internally, like, look for some Gators around to kind of help be a part of that process to really get people who want to be here. Not because they want to collect a check or whatever, who want to be here and compete and who want to win, right? So I think that's where it should go. I think it's smart people around there, and they know, they think they've been through enough, but I think they need to kind of take some of the advice from some of those people who've been there, done it, who eat, love it, and this is what they want to see the Gators get back to that standard of dominance and just competing. And you watch a game and every game is competing. And I think they did that this week. And I think we got some good things coming. It's too good of a school. It's too good of an area to recruit. And a lot of history behind a lot of that. And I think we got brighter days ahead. Can't get much worse than it's been, but so I stay positive. I mean, this is, And like I said, I'm a Gator regardless. I mean, I'm good, bad, and I'm old enough that I've seen the wins. And I really just, my point is, I just like to see the players, current former players, kind of succeed and continue to do better and continue to do good things. And I think that to me is success. Winning will come if you handle all the foundational things.
For sure. A man retired because he couldn't, if it ain't coaching the Gators, I'm just done, bro. Terry, you're a goat, man.
Appreciate you, Terry.
Y'all do a great job. Keep it up.
Thanks, appreciate man. You, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys.
Be well. Bye. Terry Jackson.
Love that level of Gator love. She's been like, yeah coach is cool. I like coaching. Urban leaves. Like, wait, they don't want me to coach the Gators anymore? Cool. Now,
retire on top, baby.
The hell if I'm ever going to put on like a Tennessee orange or a Clemson orange. It's orange and blue, and that's it.
Gillespie, bro. Gillespie, like, been rocking that crazy.
Yeah, whatever. Tennessee, and where else has he been? Oklahoma City's been some other places. All right, guys. Did you guys want to talk about coaching at all or no?
I got time.
We've been doing this for an hour and a half. Gator game.
What's up, you? We could do it another night.
We could talk a little bit about it. We're losing by 8.
I got my old losing by 5. Approved.
How much time we got left? I gotta get a TV out of my man cave.
We got 12 minutes and 6 seconds left.
Plenty of time.
All right. I hosted a show yesterday. Wanted to get your guys' thoughts. Anything change on your hot boards?
No, hot board still intact, man. I don't have a personal hot board. I'm just going by, like, you know, the proposed hot board that's you know, that everybody kind of got together. But nothing has really changed. It's a lot of
more than the people just getting together, Corey.
Hmm?
So you know a little bit more than just the people getting together.
Yeah. I know, man. I'm just trying to chill. But it's just Lane Kiffin right now, or it feels like, you know, it's going to be. I don't know if I like the strategy out the lane, like, you know, the rest of the names and how things may play out. I'm hoping now that Auburn can't open and some other jobs coming open, I'm hoping, I know Drinks coached at Auburn before. Maybe that's an attraction mm-hmm. over there. I like the hypo to maybe, you know, a different pro LSU talk. I like all that disruption in the SEC because somebody's going to have to get poached here. That's just what it is. It's a coaching market. The coaches can kind of call their shot. If you want a bigger payday, you want to hold some leverage to get it, you know, switch schools, whatever that may be. It's just a coaching market. And I think, you know, the Wild Wild West has just begun because if Tennessee get poached late and then they got to go looking for a coach, hopefully Mike Norvell keeps winning. I'm cheering. Like, I never cheered for Florida State in my life, but I cheered for them this past weekend. And we
beat
Wake.
November 29th. He ain't winning November 29th.
Nah, they'll lose that game. But
BTA.
We just need them to get like five or six, bro. Like, they get about six. I think Mike's safe. That's an improvement from two. And then, you know, and then the loser vibes just stay in Tallahassee a few more years, man. But, a lot hasn't changed, man. But I think a lot more is going to change as, you know, the musical chairs start.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a ton of musical chairs. I don't think that you're going to really hear anything for the next 4 weeks, probably. So there's going to be a lot of noise. There's going to be a lot of stuff out there. Just be cautious about what you read on the message boards. I've already seen some information that's not true, kind of populating. And I don't want to be in a position of calling people out. There's just a lot of information out there that is probably not true.
I have a non-disparagement, Dan, but you don't. Go ahead.
No. I mean, I'm not going to attack individual people. Just be careful. There's Turnkey and this administration have done an unbelievable job of keeping things quiet.
Oh,
Yeah, I did it. I did it. Yeah. On Friday and then talked a little bit more about it yesterday. So feel free to tune in, Nick. Obviously you didn't listen.
Yeah, he broke it down.
I missed Friday. I missed Friday, but you will see, if you're on Twitter and social media, you will see an announcement tomorrow for why I missed.
Okay. Friday. I'm looking forward to it. So we talked a lot about Turnkey, and then, you know, Corey and I have been doing these pop-up shows, and, you know, I think that there should be like pretty obvious reasons why Nick is not a part of those. It's not that we don't want to include Nick. We respect Nick and his role, but we'll keep talking about that. And if people have questions about Turnkey and about how this stuff works, like, I don't work for Turnkey. I don't work in that field, but I have a very good idea of how that field does work. I'm not in their field. I am in a tangentially exact same field. So be happy to talk to you guys about that, but just there's not going to be a lot. And that's for very obvious reasons that there's not going to be a lot that leaks out, but also there's just not a lot that's going to happen until the end of the season. And a lot of that, the work that happens is very administrative in nature, very conversational. And then you'll start to see things moving. So I do think that the Gators will have a coach verbally agreed to in about a month.
Yeah, you guys, and I get it. You guys came out of the gate, not you two. You guys came out of the gate. It's hot. Like, y'all thought it was a 40-foot dash and you need to get a quick start.
It's a marathon, man.
It's a marathon. I saw Corey the other day being like, whoo, already tired of these Twitter streets, bro. Like, yeah. We had our fun, we had our giggles, but like, you got to realize.
So it's a ride, bro. Like,
yeah, we're 2 weeks into it at a minimum 6-7 week process. Could go longer. 2 weeks
in feels like it's been 6 years.
It does.
Poor Ole Miss fans. They can't even enjoy their playoff run, man. They're infatuated. Every tweet
they've
got
Auburn fans coming at them. They got LSU fans coming at them. They definitely cannot keep up with Florida Twitter. My goodness.
No, they get smoked.
Relentless.
Yeah, smoke.
And there's a lot less of them, so it's a very small group of people that just get absolutely abused every tweet that they have.
And they don't attend games, apparently.
They don't. I did think it would be funny if we saw Lane Kiffin begging for fans to go to the Florida Ole Miss game.
Bro, that's like the Miami and Mississippi. Just a bunch of people on Twitter talking. No one showed up to the game.
Yeah, great Twitter presence, but the actual games is crickets, man. Imagine, like, begging the fans to come to, like, you're on a playoff run. You got to beg people to pack the stadium. The Swamp would never.
And you only have 64,000 seats.
We showed up to Billy Napier's offense. We'll show up to anything.
We sold out a game against LIU.
Yes, we would show up to anything that's orange and blue, man.
Except right, women's basketball.
Let's get out of here. We are at the 10 minute.
I had a good joke, but I'm not going to do it, man.
Oh, come on.
I'm not going to do it. It's mean. It's mean spirited.
Okay.
Did you see Jason Williams' take on women's basketball?
Women's basketball.
Yeah. I just had the whole. Yeah.
Oh, man. He went crazy.
Jason Williams' women's basketball.
It was on.
Is this going to be something we can talk about on the show?
Oh, yeah, sure. I think it's hilarious. I think it's hilarious, man.
Who was on his high school team? Randy Moss.
Randy Moss.
Randy Moss were on the same high school basketball team.
Oh.
And they were like, yo, like, you can't say a high school team. He goes, yo, my team is like, he named it his 1996 something high school. He goes, we would beat the WNBA All-Star team. I'm like, I don't know. He goes,
dude, that's nuts. 1994 like, DuPont High School would be
wow. That's what DuPont okay. High School. He goes, bro, she's going for 30. I'm going for 60. I was like, oh, 60 is crazy.
No, I got it. We got to get Jason Williams on this show.
Yo, Jay Will was talking greasy, bro. That's on my bucket list. We got to get him on the show.
Randy Moss, right. High school Randy Moss, and like anything sub 36-year-old Randy Moss is absolutely dunking.
For sure.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Dunking.
I like the way Jay Will didn't keep it like politically correct. He's just like, yeah, man, like girls basketball is cool. Women's basketball is cool, but there's high school boys basketball team that'll beat the All-Stars. It's a take.
I gotta go watch. We'll be back on Friday for game day eve. Gators by 5-9 minutes left ish in the game. Fingers crossed for Gators basketball. Before we leave, one final shout out to our friends over at Alumni Hall. Go visit alumnihall.com or go visit them in Gainesville on Archer Road, right by the Chick-fil-A that's on the north side of the road, not the one that's on the south side of the road. It's confusing because there's two Chick-fil-A's within a block and a half of each other. But Alumni Hall, go visit them. It's the gift-giving season. They have everything, the largest selection of Florida Gator stuff in the city of Gainesville. So go visit them next time you're in town or go visit them online, alumnihall.com. Let them know your friends at Stadium Gale sent you. Sorry, we just airballed a three, so it caught my attention. Anywho, before you leave, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, share this on Instagram. Appreciate everybody for watching today. We will see you Friday, and we will talk a little bit about our game on Saturday. See you guys then.